Sports Interview with Anne Liguori is brought to you by IB Cool Athleisure Wear for men and women. Technology meets fashion with IB Cool, stylish UPF 50 plus sun protection, and ice field technology to cool your body temperature on hot and humid days. Look great and protect your skin. IBKUL.com. And by Tourism Ireland. Ireland is open and ready to welcome you back. World-class courses, celebrated links, spectacular scenery, rich culture, and the warmest of welcomes await. Now is the time to get back to the things that matter most. Now is the time for Ireland. Press the green button and start planning at ireland.com/golf. My guest is Evan Priest, who co-authored a book with Tiger's former caddy, Steve Williams, called Together We Roared, alongside Tiger for his epic 12-year, 13 majors run. What an interesting book, Evan.
Thank you, Anne. You and I go a few years back, so I'm glad to be on your show. I've been on before, so thank you for having me back on.
Steve Williams was Tiger's caddy from 1999 to 2011. And together, they won 13 major titles with 6 runner-up finishes. And I understand that there were, 12 years in which Steve Williams and Tiger did not speak to each other?
That's right, yeah. Steve explains it pretty well in that it's almost like a marriage when two people split up. There's not a whole lot of reason to really remain in day-to-day contact. And as you very well know, more than anyone, Anne, that a player and caddy split and they just sort of keep going on with their careers. And, you know, the caddy finds a new bag, the player finds a new caddy, and they do their best to move forward. Because golf, it doesn't serve you any good as a professional golfer, at least in the media, we love to look backwards, but as a pro, it doesn't serve you any good to look backwards. So on top of that, obviously the elephant in the room is that there was some, you know, controversy and things in the split between Tiger and Steve. And that certainly caused a lot of that reason to not talk to each other. But they had a beautiful conversation in 2023. That's at the ending of the book. It really, I didn't try to wrap a bow on this book or this relationship. It happened organically. It's just the way that I felt that chapter and that era should close. And it very much happened in Los Angeles a couple of years ago. And they kind of buried the hatchet and they're on friendlier terms than they ever have been, or at least have been in the past 12 years. And it was a very nice way for them to kind of walk off into the sunset, you know, in separate directions.
So what actually caused the split?
Yeah, I mean, essentially after 2009, it's, you know, Steve has said publicly that the relationship and the dynamic between him and Tiger just wasn't the same. You know, maybe they were different people. I don't know. But on top of that, I suppose Tiger was starting to succumb to a few injuries. And in that time, Adam Scott, obviously, as you know, Masters champion, in 2013, he reached out to Steve because that's what any good player would do. They would want Steve's expertise on the bag, even if it was only for a couple of weeks. So he reached out to Adam and said, would you caddy for me at Congressional? That was 2011, the 2011 US Open. And initially Tiger said yes. And then as he thought more about it, Adam was such an up and coming, about to be world number one talented player for a number of years. They shared a coach in Butch Harmon, Tiger and Adam, and he thought, well, maybe I don't want Steve caddying for Adam. So he then changed his mind and they went back and forth a little bit. And the short version of the story is that Steve had his father-in-law coming over to the States to watch Steve caddy at the US Open. And then of course, Tiger's event there at Aronimink. And it just, you know, they disagreed on who said what. And eventually Steve decided that, well, I'm going to caddy for Adam anyway, even if Tiger doesn't like it. He didn't think that Tiger would fire him because of that. But as it shook out, that's exactly what happened. Tiger didn't like that. And if anything, Steve looks back, you know, sort of 14 years later, and he says he should have listened to his wife, Kirsty, a wonderful woman, who said, Tiger probably is going to sack you if you go and caddy for Adam as a once-off. I don't think you should do it. And he looks back and says, I should have listened to my wife. It's not that he regrets caddying for Adam. They won the Masters together. They had enormous success. It's just in that moment, he was too stubborn to realize what his wife is telling him, which was, don't do that. It's going to aggravate Tiger. And they split. And, you know, we were sort of all, as golf fans, we were left to wonder what could have been.
Really? I mean, what you wrote about in this book, what you were able to talk to him about is just incredible. And I know you spoke to Steve about Tiger's scandalous years, which started at least publicly back in 2009. And Steve was very honest. He said, "Look, I asked Tiger's management team to issue a statement absolving the caddy of any knowledge of Tiger's affairs, but the management team would not do that. He felt as if Tiger's management team hung him out to dry."
He did feel like that at the time. It's a tough one because, as you know, within a golf team, and especially one as high profile as Tiger, sometimes there are things you can and can't do. And sometimes, their hands are tied. So in the situation that I suppose Tiger and his team were in, maybe that there's nothing else that they could have done. I don't know. But Steve felt that he wanted some sort of public, distance from the whole saga, and they wouldn't give that to him. And for that reason, a lot of media sort of in New Zealand, internationally, Australian media as well, were just relentless in contacting him, which was their job to do that, really. And it just became, a bit of a thing where Steve would go to the shops, he would go to the supermarket in New Zealand, and he would have like golf fans recognize him and say, "Oh, you knew all about it." But thankfully, this book is not really about that. It's about putting that in the rear view and kind of celebrating the golfer that Tiger was. And we made a conscious decision not to look at the scandal through anything other than the lens of golf and how that affected Steve and Tiger's relationship. I don't think we dedicate more than 100 or a couple hundred words to it, because I really felt like, and there's a great golf writer, Bob Harrig, who once said, "When are we going to get back to talking about the golf?" And that's what I wanted to do with this book. I wanted to celebrate that the champion that Tiger was on the course. He delighted us for weekends after weekends for years and years and years, and Steve played such an integral role in that. And that's it. Really is a, I think anyway, a beautiful book that looks back at their partnership and why they work so well together.
They really worked incredibly well together and they respected each other. And I think, personally, having read this, it's because, Steve gave Tiger a lot of stuff, a lot of trash talk. He stood up to him. He was brutally honest, and Tiger really respected that from Steve.
He really did. There's a couple of times, and thank you for your kind words about the book, but you'll notice that Steve observed that often Tiger really appreciated someone who told him how it is. He liked a bit of, discipline and honesty. And you can imagine you get into that level of fame and everyone tells you what you want to hear, and all of a sudden you've got this brutally honest, hilarious caddy, Steve Williams, who's just a hard-nosed old school caddy. And and it seemed like Steve said anyway that the Tiger warmed to that idea. He loved being told exactly how it is, and anything from, their friendship off the course, but also on the course. He told Tiger exactly what needed work in his game. He was frank with that, and Tiger appreciated those observations and actually, worked those into his own game. I observed through Steve in the book that before the Tiger Slam, his wedges from 90 to 120 yards, that they weren't elite compared to the rest of his game. And Steve called that out, and he worked on the off season in 99 on that furiously. And of course, it certainly contributed, a small part to the Tiger Slam, to the 2000 sort of season that, where he won three majors. Whenever he got into that distance, and he was in that distance a lot because he was driving it so long that, he was overpowering par fours, and he often had a wedge in his hand. And in 2000, he was able to capitalize more from that distance. And that was all because, it was Tiger hitting the shots, but it was all because Steve observed that glaring weakness in 99. So Tiger really loved the honesty from Steve, and it was someone he could lean on during that time. And this is all in Steve's words. This is what Steve felt. Steve felt that Tiger felt he could lean on Steve as someone who was always going to give him the truth. And that goes from everything from the putt for par on number 17 at Medina in 99 to decisions off the course, and it was a beautiful partnership.
Yeah, they started off like the first round at Bay Hill in 1999, and Tiger just did not play well. And Steve Williams said, "Geez, Mike, for a huge star, you are seriously overrated." I love that.
Can you imagine calling Tiger Woods overrated in 1999? It's unheard of.
Exactly. Well, this 2025 Masters is the 20th anniversary of Tiger's 2005 win here with his infamous chip in on the par 3 16th. And from a personal standpoint, Evan, it was back in the day on WFAN when reporters were doing the 2020 updates. And I'll never forget this. John Minko, who was just a legendary sports update guy, he was doing the updates that day. And Mink threw it to me. I was at Augusta National for my report. And it happened to be at the precise time that Tiger hit that chip shot. So I was able to describe it in detail on the air while it was happening and talk about timing. What a moment.
Oh, that's excellent. I'm glad your update was right around that time. If you could ever dig up the audio, I'd love to listen to that if you could. So it was it's one of those moments that really transcended golf. It went into the mainstream. It became like the shot that Michael Jordan, the shot from Michael Jordan, I think it was the 89 East Conference Finals. And it's just one of those things that people outside of golf, people outside of sport, you mentioned Tiger Woods, and they, oh yeah, that's, I remember the chip in when everyone goes nuts and the ball pauses on the lip and then it drops in. And it was so, from every angle I tried to recapture that. It's a 170-yard par three. There's not much new that you can write about that, but I did work really hard. Chris DeMarco was absolutely phenomenal in telling me little details, like he didn't do this because he thought it would trip Tiger up, but DeMarco actually clubbed up and choked down a little bit and hit like a bit of a little feathered 7-iron, just because he was used to doing that in like a head-to-head or even a match play situation, where just to put some guesswork into the number with the opponent, he told me that played no role in Tiger sort of pulling his 8-iron long left of the green, because Tiger was just too locked in to notice what DeMarco was doing. But he did do that. He tried it out. He skipped a 7-iron up there, and he was sitting in prime position. And I found it really fascinating that DeMarco had been working with a psychologist, and the psychologist's mantra was prepare for any outcome. Now, he certainly prepared for Tiger to get up and down, and he probably briefly thought about, well, what if he chips it in? But he was also preparing for the scenario where Tiger makes bogey, DeMarco makes his birdie, and all of a sudden DeMarco goes to 17 tee with a one-shot lead, and all of a sudden he's nervous and he's leading the Masters. He thought about every angle. He just didn't think too much about Tiger pulling off one of the greatest shots we've ever seen in a major championship. So it was really fun looking back on that, and especially from Steve's perspective and DeMarco's perspective. What a fun moment. And the 2005 Masters, from researching it, from interviewing Steve, interviewing DeMarco, O'Meara, other voices in the book, I really got a sense of the kind of the comeback victory. Like it was, and you would have been at these majors, 2003, 2004.
Sure.
Not good years for Tiger Woods. And it's there's been so much time, I mean, there's 20 years since 2005, that I think we forget how much of a comeback that was. It wasn't just, the 10th major win, I think it was, or ninth or 10th major victory on the trot, but it was more of a, this is my new major championship record with my new golf swing under Hank Haney, and stick it up anyone who doubted me over the last 2 years, because I'm back. And he certainly was back. He won the Open Championship St Andrews a few months later, and 2005 was just one of those dream seasons.
And I love the detail you went into when they're walking up to the green after Tiger hit that 8 iron, which landed over the back of the green on the 16th. You said in the book that Tiger said, "What's over there? Do I have a shot?" And Stevie said to Tiger, "I have no effing clue, mate. I've never been over there."
Well, I have no effing clue, man. And he was exasperated. He said, as soon as they walked off the tee box, he was like, "What's up there, Stevie? What's up there, Stevie?" And he said, "Well, Steve had caddied, I think, since 1987 was maybe his first Masters." And he said, "I have no effing clue. In 18 years of coming to the Masters, he'd never seen that part of the property." So it certainly, I mean, and you remember it. You were there calling it live for radio. The lie that Tiger faced was just, I mean, that's one part that gets overlooked. It wasn't just a chip in. It was one of the most impossible shots, where you had to come down really steep on it, which meant it was going to squirt out low with a lot of spin, and it was a backstop to navigate. And on top of that, the backstop could have shot it so far back towards Tiger, it could have rolled into the bunker. So impossible shot, one in a million shot, and he pulled it off, as he always did in those biggest moments.
Just legendary. And he used a 60-degree wedge. It landed perfectly on that pitch mark, as he called it. And it rolled down that Nike ball logo hovering on the lip for what seemed like eternity, right? And then dropped in the hole. Just brilliant. But wow. And as you said, that shot certainly did transcend the sport. Well, what about the time you spent with Steve? What did he, anything he say surprise you about Tiger? Something that really maybe shocked you that you never knew before about Tiger Woods?
Yeah, and there's an easy answer to that, and that's the communication. That's the handwritten messages from Tiger, or not just from Tiger, but between Tiger and Steve, whether that be they wrote hand letters of encouragement and feedback and honest and frank feedback to each other. Steve would often drop a note in Tiger's hotel. I found this funny as well, by the way, just as a side note, that the Tiger rarely kept his clubs in the locker room like most players would. It was just such a valuable, set of golf clubs that was so calibrated to his knees that he rarely left it in the locker room. He always took it back to his hotel room. So Steve would drop the bag back and he would leave a note, just, "Tiger, you were brilliant today, but your wedges weren't up to standard. You left yourself on the short side a few times. Let's be great tomorrow," things like that. And then when I went to Steve's house in Auckland, New Zealand, and there is the most beautiful shrine to his time with Tiger, but also Ray Floyd and Greg Norman. And he's got the bag from the Buick bag from 2000. It could be the Tiger Slam bag. We couldn't really narrow that down. The 1999 Titleist bag, which is a phenomenal bag. And I saw all these beautiful photographs where Tiger had written, really nice messages to Steve. Like, there was one that really stood out to me, and that was Tiger and Steve. I don't know what Open Championship was, but it was in the early 2000s. They're walking through, wispy, burned out, British rough. And Tiger wrote, "As always, Stevie, it's just you and me, your buddy Tiger Woods." And I thought, it didn't really reconcile the image that we had of Tiger and this sort of winning robot with the caring and personal side to him that that only really Steve and the others behind the scenes in the inner sanctum saw. And when I saw that, I just thought, I don't know if a player and caddy have ever communicated this way, this thoroughly, this honestly, with so much respect. And that's why they were so good. It was the way they communicated that to each other. And I had communication on my radar from doing a podcast series with Steve, called Chasing Majors, 3 years ago. We then had Adam Scott, as a guest on to talk about the 2013 Masters. And Adam pointed to a moment where he was hitting the 8-iron into the 18th green in regulation on Sunday of the 2013 Masters. And he said the communication between himself and Steve was so precise. That's what stood out to Adam when he watches the 2013 Masters back. He said the way that Steve and I were communicating, it was so concise, it was so clear, it's so decisive that it filled him with confidence to hit that 8-iron and make the birdie and force a playoff. And I thought, well, I wonder if there was some of that with Tiger. And so when I was asking Steve questions in our countless interviews, I really tried to get at their communication. And lo and behold, it turned out it was maybe the cornerstone of their partnership.
Evan, interesting how Tiger told Steve Williams in their first meeting that he was going to break Jack Nicklaus's record of 18 major wins.
It is, yeah. And honestly, I mean, people would laugh at this thinking back on Steve Williams. Took 24 hours to say yes to Tiger Woods. I mean, it just seems, in retrospect, it seems like the most no-brainer of a decision. Of course, you're caddy for Tiger Woods. He's going to win 13 major championships with this particular caddy on the bag. But it wasn't always that way. Anne, you would know better than most people that in 1999, 2 years, almost 2 years since he had won his first major, there were maybe some critics out there who thought, well, this guy is not really going to live up to his promise. He's not the chosen one to come and save golf and challenge Jack's records. There was some of that out there. Most people who had a trained eye could see that Tiger was going to be great, obviously. But Steve still had those reservations. And when Tiger said that in that meeting at Tiger's, it was basically a job interview at Tiger's place at Isleworth when he still lived at Isleworth in 1999. And Steve thought, you have 17 majors just to equal Jack's record. We're sitting here in March 1999, and Steve was a little apprehensive, a little bit nervous, thinking about the challenge that lay ahead. And so he called Ian Baker Finch, he called Mark O'Meara, he called Fanny Sunnerson, who of course caddied for Nick Faldo for, I believe it was, 4 of his major wins in 9 years. So she caddied for 4 of the 6 that Faldo won. And Ian Baker Finch said, "You're too young to retire. You're 35, Steve. This is a chance to become one of the greatest caddies ever." And Fanny Sunnerson also said, it's too good an opportunity to pass up. But when we look back, it does seem funny that you would take 24 hours to say yes to Tiger Woods. And of course, once they cemented their partnership, it was just a fait accompli that he was going to be a great player. But yeah, I mean, imagine hearing that challenge in 1999.
And talk about the importance, Evan, of Steve Williams' read for Tiger at the 1999 PGA Championship at Medinah. Just a crucial read there, and it was different from Tiger's for sure.
Absolutely. It was, I mean, what I do love about this, and you'll find this in the book, that Michael Jordan, as a teaser, Michael Jordan plays a very minor, but, you know, still not insignificant role in that putt, you know, week, sorry, months beforehand, during a practice round. But yeah, it's one of those things that was a real domino effect in a good way, because, you know, if the putt had missed, that, you know, Tiger may not have won 15 majors. We just don't know. I'm not saying he wouldn't have. I'm just saying we aren't certain that he would have, because, as you know, and the way confidence and momentum works in professional golf, you know, if one guy gets a good bounce and hits a good shot at the right time, it can lead to four major wins. Or if they don't close out and there's enough scar tissue from blowing a 54-hole lead in a major, sometimes they never recover. Sometimes they only win one. And Steve looks back at that, and just his assertion is he doesn't want to know the other outcome if Tiger misses that putt on 17, the final round at Medinah in 1999. And basically, Tiger had overread the putt. He was going to allow too much break. Steve stepped in and said, "No way. I remember what Michael Jordan said. I remember throwing some wooden tees down in the practice round this week, and it doesn't break as much as you think. It's only basically inside left edge, aim there." And Tiger said, "He's sure." And he goes, "Effing absolutely." He makes the putt, and it just changes the entire dynamic, because, as you know, Anne, Sergio had all the momentum that day. He had all the crowd support. And if Tiger missed that putt, he's walking onto the 18th tee, having just lost the lead. He's got to make birdie to win or go into a playoff. And just making that putt allowed, freed him up to hit a 3 wood off the 18th tee and go in and make a par and win that second major by one shot. And it's just, it's one of those moments where, you know, Tiger really stood up to the challenge, and it laid the platform for him to then have the confidence to go into the 2000 season, win three majors there, and off and away he was. And it was just such a sliding doors moment that maybe sometimes it's overlooked, maybe it's not, but it's certainly a really interesting moment and a pivotal moment in their partnership.
And the honesty was there. And after that, Tiger trusted him 100% for sure. I think the fact that both Tiger Woods and Steve Williams were low key kind of guys, they loved to spend time working on their cars, cleaning their cars by hand. They bonded over cars and sports. That really helped too, right?
It very much did. And you know, O'Meara told me during the chat for the book that, and I really like this way of thinking about it, that I think Tiger, in a way, lived vicariously through Steve. You know, as a elite, one of the greatest ever golfers of all time, there are certain things you can and can't do, certain sports you can't play. You can't just be out there, you know, motorbike riding. Like, even Ricky Fowler had to give that up at one stage. And you know, looking at Steve, this guy that grew up playing rugby, could have played for the New Zealand All Blacks, the national team, and was, you know, a New Zealand saloon car racing champion on dirt speedways. And he just looked at Steve as this high octane, adrenaline seeking guy that he could live vicariously through his stories. And he also, I mean, you might remember this. Steve had a really bad accident
That's
on
right.
racing in 2005. And he broke ribs. You know, he degloved his hand, so part of the skin of his hand was torn off. And and he told Tiger, this is a beautiful gesture, by the way. Tiger offered to send his jet all the way to New Zealand, pick Steve up, and bring him back to the States and take him to what he probably thought was one of the best hospitals in the world. And so that was a nice gesture in itself. But Steve was back on the bag after this horrific accident. In 3 weeks' time, he was on the bag at Riviera. Tiger had only just won you know, what would have been the Buick at Torrey Pines, and he really, you could see that he enjoyed answering those questions on behalf of Steve. That, no, he's the toughest guy in the world. He'll be back. Don't worry about it. And you could see the pride that Tiger took in how tough Steve was and is. And it was a really beautiful partnership. They really were normal guys, as you mentioned. They like washing cars. They like, he really took an interest in Steve's racing. And one thing I've noticed, you know Tiger well, Anne, and I've been lucky enough to have a couple of one-on-ones with him. Whenever he is in someone's company, like a journalist, he does try to give you something, like connect with you in some way, whether it's a joke about your homeland or your home state or your college that you went to. He does a little bit of background and then tries to treat that person like they're important in that half an hour. And whenever, you know, he really got to know rugby and racing through Steve. And if you ever met a friend of Steve's, he would make a joke about New Zealand or about rugby or about racing with them. And he loved, you know, learning the lingo of the racing. He knew what a clean sweep was, which is one of, you know, it was essentially like, you know, like a wire-to-wire victory in golf. The equivalent of that in Steve's racing world was called a clean sweep. And Tiger knew exactly what that was, and he used to joke with that. So yeah, they really bonded over those normal things.
I mean, Tiger called me dude once. If that's a bonding experience, his agent came up to me afterwards. I asked Tiger a question at a press conference. He had been out for a long time with another injury and surgery, and yet his clubhead speed when he came back was faster than anybody on tour. So I asked Tiger to what he attributes that, just coming back from being off so long, and he was so elated with the question. He said, dude, and he went on and answered. It was like a 5-minute answer, and I almost fell off my chair. And his agent came up to me and said, that means, he likes you, Anne. He called you dude. I'm like, I have no problem with that. Anyway, two more before I let you go, Evan. When Tiger was in that so-called slump, right, in 2003 and 2004, he contemplated walking away from the game and joining the Navy SEALs. Now, I knew about the Navy SEALs and the training and all that, but maybe it was a while ago, and I've covered what all of his major titles, right? I don't remember him actually saying he may walk away from the game. That's what I thought, a revelation in the book.
Yeah, Steve recalls that moment that they were driving back from Shinnecock and into the rented house, and it was only a couple of hundred yards before the driveway of the house that they were staying in. And he said, I would Tiger said to Steve that he was thinking about going and joining the Navy SEALs. And as you can't be a Navy SEAL and a professional golfer at the same time. So ipso facto, that would have meant walking away from the game. And I whether or not Tiger really meant that at the time, he was just, I guess he was feeling overwhelmed and a little stagnant. I don't want to put words in his mouth. That's just what Tiger, sorry, Steve got the sense of. What I do take into that is what Steve said, which was, going and doing some of those Navy SEAL sessions, it seemed like that scratched an itch that Tiger wanted to scratch, and it maybe reinvigorated him for golf. Maybe he realized how good he has it in golf, and he came back, sort of reinvigorated for the 2005 season. So, just I guess the pressures of being the most famous golfer who has ever lived, had its ways of getting into Tiger's life, and that was maybe an outlet. It was an ode to his incredible military roots with his father Earl, and yeah, from there he sort of took the mantle back and was off and running in 2005.
I don't know if that was public information. Do you at that time, do you remember hearing that or no? Is that,
I don't know. I
yeah.
know that in I know that in Hank Haney's book he talks about the SEALs as well and things like that. But yeah, like walking away from the game, you just don't know how strongly Tiger was feeling about that. But you couldn't be a Navy SEAL and a professional golfer on the
Sure.
PGA Tour at the same time. So one would have to give, I would imagine. But what I do take out of it is I think Tiger went back into the 2005 season reinvigorated, and we got one of the most famous moments ever at the 2005 Masters, and you sort of wouldn't change any of the lead up to that, I wouldn't imagine.
Not at all. What led to their reconciliation back in 2023?
You know what? I guess it's just time heals all wounds is the way Steve feels. It just enough water had gone under the bridge. Tiger wasn't he's not really playing a full schedule anymore. Even in 2023, he wasn't playing a full schedule. So I think stepping away from the tour from the both of them allowed them to mellow and some of that dust to settle. And I guess it was a chance meeting that just happened at the perfect time where they both felt at peace with each other, at peace with the past. They had forgiven each other, and they bumped into each other outside of a hotel in Los Angeles, and it just laid the platform for them to have a really nice chat and to kind of leave that whole chapter at peace. And that's the ending of the book. And it was a lot of fun to put that as the ending to the book.
Evan Priest with Steve Williams together. We roared alongside Tiger for his epic 12-year, 13 majors run. I highly recommend. Thanks so much for joining us here. Really
Thank
appreciate
you for the
you
kind
being on the
words
show.
and thanks for having me on, Anne.
Thanks so much.
Sports Interview with Anne Liguori is brought to you by IB Cool Athleisure Wear for men and women. Technology meets fashion with IB Cool. Stylish UPF 50 plus sun protection and ice field technology to cool your body temperature on hot and humid days. Look great and protect your skin. IBKUL.com. And by Tourism Ireland. Ireland is open and ready to welcome you back. World-class courses, celebrated links, spectacular scenery, rich culture, and the warmest of welcomes await. Now is the time to get back to the things that matter most. Now is the time for Ireland. Press the green button and start planning at ireland.com/golf.